Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley. I am joined tonight by Sam King. We are going to give you a preview of the Purdue Boilermakers. Obviously, there's a lot of reasons why this is a very big game for the Illini. Ryan Walters is on the other sideline along with Kevin Kane and some other Illini coaches. And of course, it is a big game as Illinois looks to go to 3-2. And the Boilermakers look to avoid going to 1-4. That is not the kind of start a new coach wants to have, especially with Deion Sanders getting record audiences watching the games out in Colorado. Although that train seems to be slowing down a little bit. We'll see how it does facing the Trojans of USC this week. Sam King, he works for the Journal and Courier. They cover Greater Lafayette and Purdue University as part of the USA Network. And he obviously covers the Purdue Boilermakers and high school sports. You can follow Sam at Samuel T. King on X. I say Twitter all the time, but on X. And he's a good follow, and you'll get all the information about Purdue, gives you some ideas on staying up to date, whether it's Illinois football, basketball, or what have you that you're wanting to get prepared for. And, of course, JC Online is where the Journal and Courier is, and you can find some of his stuff there. So let's go to commercial here for a minute, and then we'll be right back with Sam King. Are you looking to grow your business? Do that with the Illini Guys Radio Network by broadcasting on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. We have over 20 stations, including stations in Chicago, St. Louis, Champaign, Decatur, Springfield, Bloomington, the Quad Cities, Rockford, Peoria, Marion, Quincy, and Jacksonville, amongst others. You can reach over 11 million people in the state of Illinois by partnering with us. Send me an email, mike@IlliniGuys.com, and let's find a way that we can build your business together. Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley. Got a real treat this week. We are going to preview the game, and the Journal and Courier has let Sam King come on. You can find him at Samuel T. King on Twitter. He covers Purdue, and it's part of the USA Today network, and he will give us a preview on this week's, I don't know if it's really a grudge match, but there's certainly a little bit of additional fire, as if two universities this close together need something else. But when part of the staff of Purdue was in orange and blue last year, that puts a little bit more intensity and a little bit more into it. Now, the coaches will probably do their best to tell us that's not true. But Sam, do you think it means a little more to Ryan Walters and crew to come out of this week with a win?
Yeah, he had his weekly press conference this afternoon, and I think he knew the questions were going to come, and he deflected a little bit, but also he's not shying away from the fact that he spent 2 years in Champaign, and there's a connection there. He knows some of the guys over there. They know him, and that adds a little fuel to the fire, and I'm sure the maybe some friendly smack talk throughout the week, and especially on Saturday when those guys get out there, because everybody's ultra competitive and you want to one up the guy that left, or you want to one up the, you know, the program that you just left to go start your own program. So on top of that, you have the Canon, which Ryan Walters hasn't touched in, you know, his 2 years in Champaign, and now he's trying to keep that where it's been the last couple of years. And as he said today, anytime there's a trophy or any extra trinket that you're playing for, that's just extra incentive to go out and win. But more importantly, I think both of these programs, this could be a turning point type game for them, where you need a Big Ten win early in the season. You know, Illinois sitting there at 2-2, Purdue sitting there at 1-3, and both probably feel that at this point the records would be a little bit better than they are. So this is a chance to kind of feel like maybe you get some momentum here early in the season and get this thing turned in the right direction.
Yeah, and of course Illinois has been, they have really struggled from the fact that they played a Toledo team that many think could end up as good as 11-1 this year in the MAC. Now we will see. That's an easy thing to talk about at, you know, the start of the year when you haven't played anybody. And of course Kansas could easily be 9-3. That we'll find out a lot about them as they play Texas this weekend. And we also you know, look at what's going on. Penn State looks to be maybe 10-2 again.
Right.
So, you know, with Illinois' first three games, one could argue that those teams could theoretically have as few as, you know, three losses, four losses at the end of the year. So it's been a tough start for Illinois. They have definitely ended up, you know, not where they want to be, but 2-2 is probably something that some of your older Illinois fans would have been more happy with, because we've been around enough to know what happens when you get your expectations too high for the Illinois football program. Things tend to go south in a really, really quick manner. And so one of the things that we've been, you never say it could get worse, because that's like cursing yourself, trying to find what weird way fate will make things get worse. With Purdue, you know, their early schedule, it was not necessarily the easiest schedule in the world either. Fresno State, who I believe they're ranked or right on the edge.
Very, very good football team, which a lot of people going into that first game, or after that first game, fan-wise anyway, was like, how do you lose to Fresno State? Well, Fresno State won its last 10 football games last year, won a bowl game, won a conference title, and, you know, was still going out and playing well with a new quarterback. So that loss, which was a last-minute touchdown by Fresno State to win, not want to say it looks better, but it looks like a respectable loss now.
Yes.
It's not the worst thing in the world to lose to that team.
Yeah, I mean, Syracuse has been famous for a good offense. And obviously, I'm kind of, before we get started here, what were your thoughts on the Wisconsin team? Because I have wondered if that team will be able to, you know, it's basically a running team that's trying to be a passing team. How is that chemistry going for the Badgers?
Yeah, it does not look like a traditional Wisconsin team, that's for sure. It wasn't a double tight two running backs in the backfield offense, but it was successful. And kind of what has been Purdue's problem through four games was why it was on the wrong end of that game. There's been periods throughout games where Purdue looks like this, you know, incredible offense, great defense. And then there's been times in the same game where it's three and out, can't get a yard on third and one, can't get a yard on fourth and one, but you want to be aggressive in those situations and go for it. And just, you know, can't cover receivers and giving up way too many big plays. So Purdue found itself down three scores early in that game, comes back out and cuts it to a one score game in the third quarter. And then kind of snowballed after, I believe there was a turnover and things just kind of piled on there at the end. And then Wisconsin scoring a touchdown and then going for two for some unknown reason in the final minutes probably left a bitter taste in some Purdue fans' mouths. It was kind of a controversial, looked like a forward pass, but it was never whistled dead. And then a player picks it up off the ground and that turns into a turnover that ultimately killed Purdue in that game. But I think Wisconsin's really good, and you know, when you start looking at the teams in that half of the Big Ten, we saw last year, it's a crapshoot. It really is going down to it. It could be anybody's game to get into that Big Ten championship game. And so each win is important. And that was big for Wisconsin to kind of get that head start when I think a lot of people will probably just, because it's Luke Fickell, tell you that's a team that's going to win a lot of games or a team that's going to be hard to beat. But now Purdue's behind the eight ball. And that makes this Illinois game all that much more important. So, you know, just raises the stakes maybe a little bit more if there wasn't enough already with the cannon. And like you said, with Coach Walters and the guys that he took from that staff to start his run as a head coach at Purdue.
Well, that's, you know, of course, Illini fans love Coach Walters. We wish him all the luck in the world, just not this Saturday. You know, the rest of the Saturdays, we're all for him, but not this Saturday. As we go here, we're going to kind of follow a pace that's kind of traditional here. The Illini guy is going to talk a little bit about the offense, and we'll go into special teams, and then we'll go into the Purdue defense. The man of the hour, that Illini, of course, the Illini were supposedly interested in Hudson Card. I think you know, he landed at Purdue, very well thought of player. How has he done for the Boilermakers, and is he living up to your expectations that you know, based on the research that you did when he came to Purdue?
Man, it's hard to gauge that because when Coach Walters got the job, he knew Aiden O'Connell was drafted or going to be drafted at that time into the NFL, and the team needed a quarterback, and he wanted to highlight who he thought was the best quarterback in the transfer portal, and he hires Graham Harrell to be the offensive coordinator. I think the story is he flew to Texas with a Purdue shirt in hand, gave it to Coach Harrell, said, "Throw this on, we're going to meet Hudson Card." And obviously impressed him, lured him to West Lafayette. But all we heard throughout spring, throughout fall camp, was that, you know, he's a superstar NFL caliber quarterback. He's a special player, you know, game changer. And based on that, without seeing any more than, you know, him throwing against his own defense occasionally, you expect to really be wowed. And I don't know that I've been wowed yet. And I think he leads the Big Ten in completions and has made some passes that not many college quarterbacks can probably make, but you haven't seen him take a game over yet. And just, you know, we've seen him make some plays with his legs. We've seen him make some impressive throws, but you know, it's probably been not what fans would have expected based on all of the hype that surrounded him when he got here. And, you know, I don't fault him for leaving Texas, knowing who was starting in front of him and knowing
what he
recruited behind him. So I think he saw the writing on the wall there and wanted to play a lot more than he was going to have the opportunity to play. And knowing he was coming to Purdue with an air raid offense, he was going to, first of all, play pretty much every snap that was meaningful, and secondly, get to throw the ball around a lot, which he's been able to do. So I do think he's progressed. He's gotten better. He's gotten smarter about running the ball, knowing when to run. He had the game-winning touchdown on the ground against Virginia Tech. And he had a rushing touchdown that at the time looked like it was going to be huge if Purdue was able to come back and beat Wisconsin, but ended up not being the case. He has taken some sacks. He's, you know, was probably part of that, is if not all of it, on the offensive line at times. And he's thrown some passes that maybe he shouldn't have, but he's definitely a legit talent. I think there's no question about that. And I think he's just going to keep getting better and better the more comfortable he gets, because even though he was at Texas and he started, you know, four or five games there, he didn't play a whole lot of college football before he came to Purdue. It was, you know, he knew his role was a backup there, and he only got on the field basically when it was mop-up duty or when there was an injury.
So looking at Hudson, I guess probably he also suffers in the fact that, you know, when Purdue talks about difference makers, they've got some guy named Breeze who played there recently, which while he may not be physically the biggest man, he left a massive set of cleats for somebody to try to put their feet in.
Yeah, and it's not just Drew Brees, although Drew Brees, being from near where Hudson Card grew up, was very instrumental in getting him here, because at the time, Drew Brees came to West Lafayette prior to the bowl game after Jeff Brohm left to go to Louisville and said, "Hey, you know, it's a month before the bowl game. I'm here to help out, you know, as a fill-in interim coach, however you need me, if you want me to coach quarterbacks or whatever it is." Never had a inkling that he was going to join the staff in the future and want to do that full time, because my gosh, he's got more money than anybody ever needs. Why would you want to get into college football recruiting and coaching when you don't need to? But he did his part to, you know, when recruits were on campus, he shook their hands, whatever it was, talked to guys. And so his impact is still felt 20 something years later, and obviously a huge name, but it's been since him. You had Kyle Orton, who played in the NFL for 10 years, yep. Curtis Painter, who played in the NFL for a while. You currently have David Blau and Aiden O'Connell in the NFL. So it's been really a long lineage of, if you go to Purdue, you got a chance to make it to the NFL as a quarterback. And I think that that's a draw, that they have the cradle of quarterbacks here that's, dates all the way back to Bob Greasy and Lynn Dawson. So huge, huge names that have been quarterbacks at Purdue, Jim Everett, so forth and so on. That's a nice draw. It's a nice recruiting touch. If you can tell a quarterback, look at all these people that we've put in the NFL at that position.
Yeah. No, that's good. So when it comes down to the running back position, obviously we saw the what I thought was a touching time when Maccabee got his scholarship, and certainly he was very valuable last season. How is the running back position doing, and is that living up to expectation with Maccabee and some of the other performers back there?
I think that if you're looking at the numbers based on what Maccabee did in the last, eight games or whatever it was last season that ultimately earned him a scholarship, it's been pretty underwhelming. But I think the running game did do very well against Wisconsin, got going a little bit. A big move was Purdue took Tyrone Tracy, who used to play receiver at Iowa and transferred to Purdue last year and was a receiver, but probably was a bit underutilized as a receiver. Didn't get him the ball a whole lot for a guy that you touted as this big time athlete. You need an open space. Purdue takes him this year and moves him to the running back position. And he's been lighting the world on fire. I think he has a rushing touchdown in all four games this season. He returned a kickoff for a touchdown against Fresno State and has really looked good. He's looked like the better of those two running backs. And then you have Dylan Downing, who's a power back and kind of a change of pace guy who doesn't play a whole lot or doesn't get a whole lot of touches, but had a 25-yard run last week as well. So I think there's this idea that those three as a unit can be really, really good because they're three different kinds of running backs. You've got a power back in Downing. You've got a guy that can run you over, but also has a little wiggle in Tyrone Tracy. And then Maccabee's just the guy that he makes people miss. He's not going to probably plow a linebacker over, but he's going to get up to the linebacker, change the direction, and turn it into a big game. But because of some blocking woes, things of that sort, I don't think that those players have been able to get to that second level where you can really see how they excel with what they have.
Yeah, and Tracy, of course, would be hard pressed to look good in Iowa's offense. It seems like for anybody, you're already, people are going to be going, I don't know if I want to transfer into Iowa City to play quarterback.
Well, yeah, look at what Charlie Jones did there at Iowa. It was basically a kick returner, and he comes to Purdue and catches 100 and something passes and is a third or fourth round NFL draft pick.
So. Exactly. Yeah. I was like, when I was a little kid, they used to always have the elephant graveyard and on Saturday morning comics, where elephants go and they would die. That seems to be where offensive players go, is Iowa.
They've had a lot of success with the defense. So,
Yeah. Well, they have. Yes, they have. Although they found out that you can't play just one side of the ball, at least not in the rain on a whiteout game in Penn State. Now, the receiving core, now that's an area that people expect Purdue to be extremely talented in. They've been doing it for decades. How does this receiving core look? Are they living up to your expectation? And then how do they compare to some of the receiving cores of the past?
I think this group has exceeded expectations, at least early on, from what I expected, at least. I thought senior TJ Sheffield, he might be the guy that was the breakout, and it turned out that it's been Deion Burks, who the first drive of the season, they throw a slant to him and he turns it into a, whatever it was, 84-yard touchdown. And he's really been a guy that I think they need to get him the ball more, and because of what he did in the first game of the season, defenses now are scouting against him. But you got to be creative and find a way to get him the ball, because he's the fastest guy on the team, and he's had so many big plays already. And then Abdur-Rahman Yassin is a guy who's had kind of an injury-riddled career. And, you know, probably the best game he ever had, I think, was against Illinois a year or two ago. He made a big catch in that game. But he's been solid. The guy doesn't drop a ball. If you get it close to him, he's going to pull it in. And he's having a big year, kind of the year that he thought he was capable of having maybe last season. But those two have been really good. And then Sheffield's been, you know, definitely out of those three, the third option, seems like. But I think that's a good group. It's just a matter of you've got to be able to get them the ball. And when they do, those guys have been pretty special. Comparing them to the past, I feel like last year, receiver almost had more talent, but it was not spread out as evenly because it was so Charlie Jones heavy. It was, I mean, he had 100 and something catches. And beside that, it was Payne Durham, who was the tight end. And then there wasn't a whole lot of other guys getting the ball on offense when you were throwing it. So I think this group as a unit can be really dangerous because you've got at least three options. And then there's been some other guys that are probably capable. Unfortunately, the big transfer that Purdue was able to get, Jamal Edrin from Florida Atlantic, came in here and then tore his ACL during fall camp. And I think he was expected to be a big time playmaker. He's a big dude that you can throw jump balls to, and supposedly he can jump up and pull those down, but he would have really helped this offense. And now, you know, unfortunately what we're being told is you're going to see in the future what he can do when packaged with this air raid offense this year and some of the guys who probably won't be here next year who currently are, you know, that's sad because right now they could use another playmaker on the offensive side of the ball.
How is the offensive line doing? I know that's been an area of up and down play really throughout the Big Ten West.
Yeah, it's man, there's been before the Wisconsin game, I think it was, I looked it up and Purdue had 19 tries at a 3rd-and-1, 3rd-and-2, or 4th-and-1, and had only converted 8 of those. And a lot of that was Purdue just feeling like we should be able to run the ball for 1 yard and then get stuffed. And one particular play, I believe against Syracuse, decided to scrap trying to go for a run and threw a pass. And, you know, on 4th-and-1, you really just feel like we should be able to QB sneak it and pick up a yard. And Purdue hasn't tried a QB sneak on a 4th-and-1 or a 3rd-and-1 yet, which probably is more telling of what that offensive line can do. The team did get center Gus Hartwig back last week, and that should really help bolster that line. He's an upgrade from Josh Kaltenberger, who was playing there. And then a few weeks ago, I think Purdue was down to its fourth center. So that was a recipe for disaster. But I think that's an area where Coach Walters was asked today to evaluate his offensive line play. And he never said they're playing poorly. He never said they're playing well. He kind of just not avoided the question, but answered the question without answering the question in a way where he just said, you know, I think that we're getting better in that area or something along those lines. So
he learned something from Coach B then, because yeah. If Coach B doesn't want to answer a question, he's not going to.
Coach Walters has answered everything, but maybe just doesn't give you an answer when you answer me though.
And so when Illini fans hear air raid, you know, a lot of people, depending on your age and et cetera, they have different definitions. How would you describe the passing offense in terms of, you know, the QB drop back depth, how long he's holding onto the ball, what kind of patterns they're looking at, you know, how would you give Illini fans a descriptions of what they're going to face? They've faced a ton of guys, you know, a couple guys as good as anybody gets in Daniels and Finn, you know, who are quarterbacks who can make plays and extend plays with their feet. They were nightmarish to deal with. Then you get, you know, Drew Aller in the backfield, who's just going to use the cannon and throw it around. And then even the backup quarterback for FAU, Danielson, was you know, he was just kind of a light version of everybody else, not quite, because he is a backup. But what are Illini fans going to see out of this offense in terms of what the passing game looks and feels like?
I think some of it will depend on, you know, how Illinois plays the Boilermakers, but Hudson Card definitely has the ability to extend plays. He's pretty athletic and good on his feet. It's been a mix of finding guys in the flat. It's been a, you know, not maybe as many deep shots as people at Purdue would be accustomed to, especially with Aiden O'Connell, who, you know, had pinpoint accuracy and was never afraid to launch it as far as he could throw it. But there have been opportunities to go deep, and separation maybe has been an issue sometimes with the receivers beating DBs, even with Deion Burks, but he's probably more often than not, if you go back and look at film, probably is covered over the top as well as by a cornerback after that first game. So I think it's, you know, probably going to pick up your chunk yards on more shorter passes, and then those turning into big gains then, rather than throwing a deep ball and just trying to hit the home run. But it's been pretty successful for Purdue so far. I think the offense, even though, you know, go back to that Syracuse game with 7 fumbles and an interception, nobody's going to look good when you do that. But despite all that, Purdue was marching up and down the field. It was just, you've got to complete the drives and not turn the ball over. And that ended up being the demise of that team against Syracuse. So take care of the ball. And I think that Purdue's offense is really, really good. It has looked amazing at times. People think back to, you know, Air Raid, my version probably goes back to Mike Leach at Texas Tech. Yep. And a lot of that, you know, Seth Dagey was a quarterback in that offense. He's now the tight ends coach for Purdue. Graham Harrell was a, you know, lit up college football in that offense, and he's now the offensive coordinator putting his own spin on the Air Raid. So you would anticipate, you know, some game where Hudson Card goes out and throws for 500 yards, but so far it's been, you know, I think he's got one 300 yard game, but probably used the backs a little bit more than I initially thought in this offense, and especially the tight ends, because, you know, my question all up until the first game was, how do you use the tight ends in this offense? I don't know if they really have a role. And even after that first game, I think tight ends caught 1 or 2 passes and been more and more getting those guys involved in the weeks since.
Yeah, it's like I said, Illini fans are a little bit hesitant after having some challenges, particularly those first 2 weeks were tough, and kind of Penn State, the challenges were self-inflicted with 5 turnovers to 0. How turnover prone is this team with interceptions, fumbles? Is that an issue that Purdue runs into, or have they been pretty good about protecting the ball?
Well, through 2 games, I think Purdue and Penn State were the only teams in the Big Ten without a turnover. And I thought, well, ball security at least is an area that Purdue can hang its hat on right now, because no turnovers in 2 games, I don't care who you're playing, that's pretty good. And then the 7 fumbles against Syracuse, and all of a sudden it's like you went from like whatever it was +2 in the turnover discrepancy with the opponents to you're at a negative. So that one game probably was an anomaly, but it also shows that there was some things to clean up. Now, I think that some of the issues, Maccabee maybe in that game was not carrying the ball as tightly as coaches had hoped for. And Coach Walters had kind of indicated that he was carrying the ball loosely, and Syracuse saw that and was just punching away at it every time he had it. And then I think one of the fumbles was Hudson Card just getting blindsided that had no chance of holding onto the ball unless he had the strongest hands in the world. But I feel like the team is overall pretty good about taking care of the ball. The fumble last week, like I said, it's a play where Maccabee's got to know that the whistle hadn't blown and maybe just fall down on the ball or, you know, whatever. And instead he just picks it up off the ground and is holding it. And a guy from the Wisconsin defense comes and punches it out on the ground and falls on it. So I wiped that one away. There was an interception, I believe it was the last game, that was tipped, and, you know, those things happen too. But for the most part, I think Purdue's done a pretty good job of taking care of the ball, aside from one game that just kind of everything seemed to snowball and go against it.
Yep. No, that's good. The other thing is, I wonder how are Purdue fans reacting to the fact that they're going to be playing on Peacock. This is actually Illinois' first time ever being on Peacock. And there's a whole group of fans who are like, now I got to pay $5.99 for this. What the heck? How, yeah. You hear anything from the Purdue fans on that?
Well, last week's game was on Peacock, I believe. So, okay. I can't remember because I'm not watching it on TV, obviously, and I have Peacock, so it's not an issue for me.
But, right.
I did see rumblings about, you know, that it's crap, that it's on Peacock, and now I've got to subscribe to the streaming service to see games. My take is you're going to want to see all those basketball games that are going to get thrown on there anyway. So you might as well pay the $6 a month. It's not that much. And, you know, if that's going to be the deal breaker, then you're probably not as interested in Purdue football or Purdue basketball as you originally thought. But
fair comment.
Yeah. But yeah, obviously people that have become accustomed to, you can watch every game on TV, or if you have the Big Ten app, you can watch any game anywhere that's on that network. There's some frustration, but it's just the world we live in now, and it's going to get more and more like that probably, because there's far too much money involved, and especially now with NBC's involvement, that these things are just going to happen. They want these games. They're going to have guys or teams playing every night of the week at some point, I'm sure. You know, last week Purdue played a Friday night game, and there were fans that were frustrated about that. And, you know, why do we have to play on Friday night? Well, TV wants a game on Friday night, and this week it's Purdue, Wisconsin. So sorry about your luck.
Yeah, if they're bringing the Brinks truck to Purdue to pay for, you know, for that programming, I guess you got to show up on Friday. Illinois will play two games this year on Friday night, which, you know, I don't think anybody's happy with. But, you know, again, the money all spends really well. Going to special teams, how is the punting, and you know, the kicking games, both punting and kicking for the Purdue Boilermakers this year?
I think that special teams overall has been a strong point. That said, Purdue has missed an extra point and two field goals, I think, so far this season. So that's cause for concern. Ben Freehill, the guy who missed all those kicks, is currently out with an injury. So last week, Julio Macias, the backup place kicker, came in and booted a 34, I think it was, yard field goal and split the uprights, and that was good. But I think the return games have been strong. The coverage on kickoffs and punts has been very good. And then Jack Ansell, the punter, for the most part, he's a rugby-style punter, Australian kid, which is he's a joy to talk to. He's hilarious. Big, muscular dude as a punter that looks like he should be playing linebacker. But it's just a unique way of kicking with the rugby style that lends itself to putting teams on its heels, because, you know, it looks like there's a threat that he can maybe take off and run. And you have to respect that, or at some point he will. But because of that kind of running start and kick, the ball tends to sometimes hit and roll, and you get those extra yards on that and pin teams back.
Yeah, we have Hugh Robertson, who's a former Australian rules football player and policeman. So, you know, he's, I think, the second or third oldest player in the NCAA this year. So that Australian rules football or rugby or whatever it is, it does make for some interesting, because you're just not certain, like, is he going to run? And then they just unleash a kick and you're like, holy cow. You know, it's they kind of turn punting into kind of an art of deception that you don't know what's going to happen until the last quarter second when they unleash it. And yeah, and I noticed that you talked about a kickoff return for a touchdown, and kickoff return yards look like averaging 35. So that's pretty impressive for the special teams for the Boilermakers.
Yeah. And most of that is on one return, but there's been some other good returns. And, you know, I think last week Purdue let a punt roll that probably it shouldn't have. And that was, maybe if you're going to dock them, you got a fair catch the ball there and not let it roll down dead inside of the five. But
isn't that a thing around all of college football nowadays? Yeah. It's like in the old days, and I'm way older than you are, but we used to have an up man on the punt who was like 8 yards, 10 yards in front of the punt returner. And then that guy's job, because I did it in high school, I had to catch any piece of crap, fair catch it, and make sure that it didn't roll. Right. And nowadays you get guys who let balls, you know, they'll hit on the 20-yard line, roll down to the 3, and you're like, how did that just happen?
Right. But you also see the same guys let it bounce and pick it up rolling, yeah, and have a running start and turn it into a big play. So I don't know. Purdue in the past, and obviously it was a different coaching staff, would put a sure-handed receiver back there and fair catch it. I don't care if there's 30 yards of grass in front of you, fair catch it, and we'll take it where it lands. So now you don't have that. They've got a playmaker back there that I think they want to take some risk, but at the same time, sometimes you just have to take the fair catch and and be happy with where the ball is. Purdue did take a couple of kickoffs out of the end zone last week that bit them in the butt. One got to the 14, I think one got to the 19, and after that it was like, just fair catch it or let the ball go through the back of the end zone. We're not going to deal with this anymore. We'll take it at the 25. So getting smarter about that. But overall, yeah, I think that's a weapon for Purdue that will come to play at some point again, where you get some big yards on a kickoff or a punt return and set yourself up.
Now, defensively, Purdue, you know, they've obviously, you've got Ryan Walters, who's famous for his defense. You know, Illinois led the country in scoring last year. How is the Purdue defense doing this year overall as a unit?
I would say not very good, but that's in hindsight a little bit. I think that, first of all, the secondary that he had at Illinois was incredible. So with those guys, it worked very well. Some of these guys are, you know, it's different personnel, and he's, you know, Coach Walters has to make do, and Kevin Kane, the defensive coordinator, with, you know, the hand that they've been dealt. And, you know, some of these guys are transfer portal guys or guys that were from the previous regime or whatever. And you're now putting them in this, you know, unique defense that nobody else really runs. And the first time Purdue fans saw it, they're thinking, why in the hell is there a safety lining up 25 yards back like he's returning a punt? Well, that guy is a true freshman and leading the team in tackles, has two interceptions, and, you know, probably Purdue's best defensive player right now. So there's been signs that it works. There's been, you know, I think Kadrin Jenkins, an outside linebacker, leads the Big Ten in sacks. Clearly, they're getting pressure on the quarterback with the outside linebackers, which is the whole premise, it seems like, of this defense, is, you know, make the quarterback make a decision before he wants to and feast on that. But what's also happened is just way too many big plays. And that probably goes back to some of the defensive backs that Illinois had last year and the year before versus, you know, what Purdue has right now. And you're asking those guys to cover a receiver man-to-man, and they haven't had to do that, or, you know, at least right now aren't excelling at that consistently. And that'll lead itself to, you know, the opportunity to make big plays. But there's been, you know, I think Fresno State went behind with 4 minutes to go in that game, and it was nothing for the quarterback to just take a three-step drop and hit a receiver in the open field and marched right down the field and won the game at the end. So you got to shore that up a little bit. But, you know, I was skeptical of the defense when I first saw it against Fresno State, because he gave up 39 points in the first game. And then the next week, you come out and shut out Virginia Tech in the second half and look like a totally different defense. And, you know, against Syracuse, the issue was the quarterback running. And I think initially Purdue wasn't able to have a guy spying that quarterback, who's also a very good runner as anyway. So a lot of the yards came on the ground from the quarterback in that game. And then Wisconsin made Purdue pay a little bit with, you know, the ability to move around some and run with the quarterback as well. So that's probably an area where you need somebody who can be athletic and go get the quarterback when he's in that situation where he can take off and run. But at the same time, you know, Marquise Wilson, who was a transfer corner, came in, and I think he leads the Big Ten in pass breakups right now. So there's been a lot of good, but also a lot of bad in this defense. But when you look at the overall, you know, you gave up 38 to Wisconsin, I believe. You gave up 39 to Fresno State. You gave up whatever it was, 30-plus to Syracuse. That's not good, and you're not going to win a lot of games where you have to score 40 points to win the game.
Yeah, although in the Big Ten West, 40 points, you might be able to beat Iowa seven different times. You know, that's, you know, that's what you're looking at there. But when you're looking at that defense, let's start up front, the front, you know, the front line. How is this team? Are they pass rushers? Are they, you got run stoppers? How would you characterize the defensive line and what they're bringing to the table this year?
I think that the run defense has been incredible. Now, if you look at the numbers after four games, it probably doesn't look good. But that's, again, a quarterback that rushed for 200 yards against you 2 weeks ago, mostly throwing those numbers out of whack a little bit. I think they're very good run stoppers. They got kind of a mix of some smaller guys and some massive dudes who plug holes. They are able to do different things. You know, you got a 6 foot 6 foot, probably 260-pound guy in Mo Amanadeh, who's a spells those guys sometimes, and he's much different than, you know, the 6'5" monsters that they have in there at times. That was a major area of concern when Coach Walters got here in the spring and saw what he had on the defensive line. He was thinking, my gosh, this defense isn't going to work with these guys. And I think he recognized that and went out and got, you know, a defensive lineman from Arkansas, a defensive lineman from Vanderbilt, and, you know, started plucking guys from the SEC and said, you know, if they can play in the SEC, surely they can play in this defense for us in the Big Ten West. And it's worked out pretty well, I think, up front in terms of stopping the run. Now, you do have to probably get to the quarterback a little bit more, even though there's been pressure on the quarterback at times. Sometimes it's getting to the quarterback and not being able to bring him down, and then it turns into a big play. And at that point, kind of all becomes a jailbreak and guys are running in the open field, and it's not maybe what you see on tape, because at that point you're just kind of freestyling and trying to make something happen.
Yeah. In terms of the linebacking and edge rushing, Purdue's had some, you know, some outstanding players there over the years. How does this group match up?
I think that, there's been so many really good defensive ends come out of Purdue. Just as Purdue has the cradle of quarterbacks that uses a recruiting pitch and has a little exclusive club, Purdue has what it calls the den of defensive ends with, you know, guys like George Karloftis in recent years, Ryan Kerrigan, Sean Phillips. It can add out another position that has just churned out NFL player after NFL player at that position. And so you sell that to these guys like, hey, come and be the next member of the den of defensive ends. And what you got in that was Kadron Jenkins and Nick Scorton, who were supposed to be the, you know, maybe the Dwight Freeney, Robert Mathis, if people want to remember the Indianapolis Colts duo. And then Coach Walters comes in here, and now you've got three down linemen, and those guys are standing up. And that, I think, excited them because they were used to putting their hand in the dirt and trying to beat a tackle. And now it's like, oh, you're already got me up on 2 feet, and I'm making a lot of football-based plays without having to think too much. It's more like read and react. And so they're loving it. Those guys are had a little friendly competition with each other, like, who's going to get the first sack? Okay, now you got the first sack. I'm going to get more sacks. And I think that makes it a fun little competition within the larger competition of, you know, a football game or a football season. And I think over time, as this defense kind of gets more and more figured out, because right now I think guys are still kind of trying to find their way a little bit. They're doing what they're asked to do, but it's just been fine-tuning week in and week out. And like you said, that first season, there's probably a lot of that when you have a new coaching staff and you bring in a lot of transfers and you're playing younger guys because, you know, there's a future that, you know, this, right. You don't want to be, as much as you would love to be Big Ten champions in year one, you want to be 3 and 4 years down the road to have a sustainable winning program. And I think that Purdue looks like it could be on its way. And if it gets there, it's going to be because of the right mix of guys in this defense. And that might not be the season, that might be in the future, but those two guys will definitely be a cornerstone of it.
And the DBs, how are they looking?
Marquise Wilson's been really, really good. And there's been Marquavius Brown and Botros Alessandro. Botros is a guy that kind of mixes in and spells some guys. I didn't think he was playing very well at all. I thought he was kind of easy to pick on through three games. And then last week he made what could have been a game-changing interception where he just ripped the ball out of a guy's hands. And that's where you kind of, if you're a Purdue fan, have hope. Like, hey, here's a guy that for 3 weeks we're getting on Twitter and screaming that, you know, never put that guy on the field again. And then he makes a huge play. Maybe guys are getting used to it, figuring it out a little bit. And then maybe the disappointing thing, if you look at, you know, the secondary group, is Cam Allen is a guy that's really, really athletic, really talented. He has 12 career interceptions. He's passed Rod Woodson for interceptions in Purdue history. And that was, I think, third on the all-time list. And a guy with, you know, that many picks clearly is a playmaker, but he's also been a guy that's given up some of those big plays where he's been burned by a receiver. And I don't know if part of that is he was in the previous defense playing a natural safety position where he's standing 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage and able to see more. And now he's, you know, at times in this defense, almost a linebacker up there covering a guy. And then I think Sanusi Kane, another safety, has been really good and kind of a leader of this defense, if not just with his play, definitely with his ability to speak and get everybody on the same page. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Dylan Thieneman, a true freshman, playing that, whatever the position is titled, where he's standing deep. He's leading the team in tackles. He's leading the team in interceptions. He looks like the real deal. And he's a guy that came in here, and when they say we're starting a true freshman in that position, kind of like, oh, there must not be anybody else to put back there. And then you see him play in the first game, and he has 10 tackles and an interception. The next week he has 7 tackles and an interception. And then I think the game after that had 14 tackles, and you're like, all right, maybe the guy just is good at football. So that definitely bodes well for the future. And I think that after Cam Allen and Sanusi Kane are gone, he kind of, even next year as a sophomore, probably becomes a leader of that defense. So again, looking down the road, you have high hopes for the future that, you know, this thing's going to get rolling. But right now, I'm sure there are a lot of fans who are looking at a 1-3 football team that a year ago was playing in a January 2nd bowl game and in the Big Ten title game and saying, you know, what the hell all went wrong under this new coaching staff. But I think that it's a situation where people probably need to be a little bit more realistic and patient with this group.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, they're probably in a similar situation in Illinois where they look at every game on the schedule and they can map out how they can win the game. But unfortunately, they can also map out how they would lose it, right. You know.
No, I think Purdue has beaten Purdue on 2 occasions this season. So, I know there's another team playing and scheming and trying to win a game too, but there's been some self-inflicted wounds that have put Purdue in bad situations and games that ultimately became losses.
Yeah. So if are there any players that you look at and you say these guys have to have a good game this weekend that the Illini fans should be keying on and looking for if Purdue is going to be successful?
I think what the biggest key is, and I know that there's a lot of different things from what Illinois was the last 2 years. But I think that you have to lean on the experience of the 4 guys on staff who came from Illinois, just knowing what you know about that group. And even if it looks different, you know, some of those players and what they're good at and what they're not good at. And you have to, you know, maybe expose those weaknesses where, you know, hey, I coach this guy and he's not so good when you do this or when you do that. And take advantage of that. So I think the key players are probably the coaches right now are fans are throwing a lot of the blame at. So they have to do well. And I think that, you know, I talked about Hudson Card not having that big game yet or that wow moment. I think this is a week where you need him to show up and show why Purdue was so adamant that they go pluck him out of the transfer portal and basically name him QB1 before he even is enrolled at Purdue University. So he will definitely play very well at times, I'm sure, down the rest of the season and in the future. But I think it has to start now. And as Coach Walter said at his press conference today, you never know when a streak is going to start. So that's kind of you have to sell your team a positive spin when things aren't going well. And I think that that's what it is like. Hey, lots of teams lose 3 out of 4 games, but can we go out and win, you know, 3 or 4 in a row after this? And looking at the schedule and seeing Illinois, not a world beater, seeing Iowa next week and knowing that team's not great offensively, as you pointed out, maybe this is a point in the season where, hey, that's a chance to get a couple wins in a row. And then we're 3-3 and fans are back on board and thinking we can go to a bowl game.
And then a final question for you, if you were, you know, pushed to pick a winner and a potential score, what are you thinking for this week's game?
I think, man, I picked Purdue to win the first 3 games. And then last week with Purdue's history against Wisconsin and just the fact that Purdue had burned me twice, I said Wisconsin's going to win this game. And people burned me at the stake for it. So, but, you know, I just think it's Purdue's homecoming. And I think there's a lot of other maybe distractions going on. But there's also Purdue's backs are against the wall. And I think that because of that, Purdue's going to come out and start better. Getting off the bad starts has been the struggle. And Purdue's gotten behind, I think, in the first half in every game this season and been outscored by a massive amount in the first half this season. So if I guess I'm avoiding your question a little bit, maybe I learned from Coach Walters and Coach Bielema. If Purdue can get off to a better start, Purdue will win this game. If Purdue's trying to play from behind and having to force things, I think that Illinois wins this game. But I also think these are two teams that, like I said, this could be a turning point. I think this is a game that there's 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and we have no idea who's going to win the game yet.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you. Illinois they went in with their first lead in the half against FAU, and then that allowed them to let the rushing game go absolutely ape in the second half. So Illinois fans are hoping to see the Illini start out faster and then they can do what a Brett Bielema team does, which is chew up time and yardage in the second half. It is not very romantic to watch. It is unless you're Brett Bielema, who loves it because that's how he wins. And so I think
he knows all about Bielema's system and has been beaten by it many a time. So
yeah. Well, and it's just an interesting thing is when he first was hired as coach, I was like, ugh. But you do appreciate, his attention to detail and his understanding. And really, he's got a pretty good understanding of what his teams can do. And he tries to get them to play within that universe as opposed to, wish casting and, trying to put somebody who can't throw into a position where they're going to throw 50 times a game or whatever you want. I think he realizes that it's not EA Sports. A player can do something. You got to kind of lean into their strengths.
Right.
But I do think it's going to be an exciting game. I think Illinois may eke it out at the end, but I have to be honest with you. This game is probably going to go down to who makes the biggest mistake last may end up losing this game. And I know that sounds like a kind of a negative, but you got to go out and grab it. And I don't know that either team has demonstrated the ability to go out and grab it quite yet. I think both coaches are looking for that to be seen and be learned. And we'll see, then again, Johnny Newton could have an incredible game and if he's able to dictate what happens along the, he had havoc. He really played a great game against Penn State. But the five turnovers kept putting Illinois back against the wall. It didn't matter,
Well, I think just kind of to follow your point there, Illinois probably the last few years felt like it should have won this game against Purdue and didn't. So I think that's a lot of motivation for the Illini too, to say, man, we're giving wins away against that team. And last year cost Illinois a chance to play for a Big Ten championship. So,
yes. And as you look at this week, Illinois, this is a big game because if you beat Purdue and you go to 3-2, you can easily look through the end of that schedule and you can see a pathway to at least a bowl game.
Right.
And with some good fortune and a lack of injuries, you could see a way to go to a fairly nice bowl and maybe even the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah.
And it's not trying to say that Illinois is a great team because, like I said, in the West, the team that makes the most mistakes is probably going to lose most of these games because they're not that far apart.
Right.
And so, you've got to get your team to make fewer mistakes. A game like Penn State happens, Illinois is not good enough to win that game. So you have to eliminate those turnovers.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And I mean, there's plenty of evidence throughout the years that it's wide open in this division. And with this being the last year of the division, I think everybody wants to claim that and get their chance to play in the Big Ten title game, because if we're being honest, when it gets to being four more teams in this thing, Illinois and Purdue are never going to be in this situation to be talking about playing in the Big Ten title game, I don't think.
It'll be certainly tough. I'm old enough to have seen teams rise and fall more than once. But you're right. When you bring in Washington, USC, and Oregon, all three are top 10 teams, And then you've got UCLA that's, you know, in the teens and moving up. And you add those into the mix to Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State. Well, that means that a lot of teams are playing for eighth. Oh, wait a minute. That's usually Wisconsin or Iowa. So now you're looking at, okay, we're playing for, you know, we're playing for 10th or whatever, you know, and all of a sudden the math gets daunting. So, yeah, you definitely want to get your wins while you can. Was there anything you wanted to add in or anything that I didn't ask you about that you wanted to throw in there?
No, just I guess from my vantage point, I asked Coach Bielema this at the Big Ten Media Days. I think I bluntly said, is Coach Bolter is ready to be a head coach? And his response was, you know, I made him a coordinator at 34 years old. So clearly I think he's ready. And then 2 years later, he's the coordinator of the year in college football. So just kind of what's the overall feel about, you know, when he left for Purdue? Was it more, you know, he burned us and left, or was it like, hey, we're happy for that guy? That's one of our guys getting an opportunity to elevate his career.
He was well liked. And so there's no doubt. People probably got madder because, you know, Hudson Card was another one Illinois wanted. And
right.
And so that people were a little like, oh, great. Look, he's going to be a thorn in our side. And that I think is what Illinois fans are most worried about is that Illinois fans are pretty sold on his talent level. He was a good leader, you know, was able to get that team to rise up to all sorts of challenges on the defensive side of the ball, was very personable and did a great job of recruiting for the Illini while he was here. So you see everything that you need for a successful head coach. So it's more like the biggest thing was people would have loved to have seen him get a job, but just in a different conference where you didn't have to fight him, right, not only every year, but for a ton of recruits because of their proximity. Yeah. The best case scenario, Illinois fans were expecting after this season that he would get that opportunity. There were some people surprised just because 2 years is not something that generally gets rewarded with a head coaching job in the Big Ten or the SEC. But you go back to the performance of the Illinois defense, and then you look at like just how bad it was under Lovie Smith. And some of these guys were the same guys, you know, Witherspoon was a zero star guy who played for Lovie Smith. I don't know that anybody thought he was going to be a great player. And then, you know, he ends up being the fifth guy in the draft. Defensive coordinator has something to do with that. So I think that he was well recognized for his talent, but people were really hoping that didn't have to run into him quite as often as they will now.
Yeah, I think when he was hired here, and Purdue is very much fan base, believes in offense, throwing the ball all over the place, scoring a ton of points, and that's the style of football we play, and that's how we win games. And then you hire a defensive guy, and they're looking at, you know, watching the Michigan game with Illinois last year and thinking this is the type of games we're going to see is 20-16 type games. That's not what we're getting thrilled to go watch. But then he got here and he started meeting fans and going out in public, and his interviews were, you know, on YouTube and things like that. And people started to be like, you know, I really like this guy. He's got personality. He's got swagger. Talks a little trash, things that, fans weren't accustomed to under Jeff Brohm. And then they bought in, and now Purdue's 1-3. And it's almost like those same fans that were like, I love this guy, what a great hire, are like, oh gosh, we're setting the program back 10 years now with this guy. And
well, just remind them that, you know, the season is only, it's not done after four games. And I think the same thing that same counseling can be given to Colorado fans, as Dion, you know, and company have, I believe, five more ranked teams to play on their schedule. So, you know, you can declare victory after four games, and sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. But my suspicion is if you were wanting to put money on a guy who's going to be a good head coach, I think Purdue made a very good choice. And when it comes to good head coaches, I think you're better being a year early than a year late. You know, Illinois got three wonderful years of Bill Self. And the biggest regret Illinois fans have is how you couldn't find a way to get him under contract, because it was clear he was going to be one of the best coaches in college basketball. And yet you you know, at that point, you should have just, I know that's not my money, but you should have just figured out a way to outbid Kansas, realizing that the results on the field or on the court would pay for that later on.
Yeah.
I think Ryan Walton's going to be, Walter's going to be very good. And I think there is, you know, I think unfortunately over the years, Illinois fans are going to more and more wish, they'll be happy he's having good luck, but they'll wish he was, you know, in the SEC or somewhere where they, you know, some of that good fortune doesn't come off of the Illini.
Yeah, that was my initial, upon meeting him, thought was, you know, this guy appeals to 17, 18-year-old kids that you're out trying to recruit, and that's half the battle right there. And then Obviously on top of that, being African-American, I think that probably helps in the recruiting game when you're recruiting those kids. So I don't know that from experience, obviously, but I don't think that hurts at all. And I think that he's very likable. He's very, you know, can be businesslike, but he's very personable. And you can kind of see that he's real. He's not out there just selling you something that he's not. So
yeah,
people can sense reality and know that he's being truthful with them. And I think that, you know, be patient with this guy. And I think he's going to do good things at Purdue. And, you know, on top of that, I think that he hopes to get a win against Illinois just because that's where he came from. And that's a chance to really maybe jumpstart his career here and get the fans to buy into what he's selling, because right now, unfortunately, he's sitting at 1-3.
Yeah, I think the fans will figure out that it was a good choice. And I would just prefer him to go to 1-4 and then do whatever streak he wants to do. Just start it, not this Saturday, but wait a Saturday.
I would prefer him to win only because I have to go to the press conference after, and I know what he was like after they beat Virginia Tech, and I know what he's been like the other three games, and you're not getting the same responses and the same emotion as that Virginia Tech victory.
Well, that's good. You should never enjoy losing, so that's awesome to hear. Not that surprises me at all. Perfect. Well, hey, folks, that was Sam King. And again, you can go to the Journal and Courier. That's at JC Online, and you can see what he's doing there. Or you can cut out the middleman and go to at Samuel T. King, and you can get his opinions there. And I'm telling you, guy's a good writer. And I think you'll see that if you want to understand what's going on at Purdue, he's the guy you want to follow. So thank you so much for being on this evening. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime. Let me know if you ever want me back on in the future.
Excellent. We'll be right back after this break. Whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, halfway across this great nation, or halfway across the planet, IlliniGuys.com keeps you in the know. Whether it's game results or what's going on in recruiting behind the scenes, IlliniGuys.com covers it. Only $99 a year, and you get a free 7-day trial to kick the tires. Go to IlliniGuys.com, click the register button that's right next to the 7-day free trial, and we'd love to have you as a subscriber. IlliniGuys.com. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Eye on the Illini. We want to thank Sam King for coming on. It was fantastic to have him sharing a little bit about the Purdue team. And of course, you can stay tuned at IlliniGuys.com for a week full of articles and podcasts to get ready for the game this week. We're looking for the Illini to come out in a very tough Ross-Ade Stadium, and we will hopefully see the Illini pull out a victory there on the road. Last couple of years, Illinois thinks they should have won. It's time for them to actually hang up the W. So with that, this is Illini guy Mike Kegley saying, go Illini.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.